sir. We promised you a great
gorgeous
main
George. Here we come.
Andre, the Giant.
WrestleMania.
Do I have everybody's attention now?
The Right Hook is a Pantsless Aggression production.
Do you like parties?
Yeah.
We can invite all our friends and have soda and pie.
Yeah!
I hope no bad people show up.
Disregard that, Frank. It's a bunch of liberal bullshit.
Been alive, see the top of the rock still. From the streets to hang high, back to Knoxville. Sitting high on the mountain, on the whole top, spreading the news. Been a lot of false prophets and quick hits. And a lot of un-American bullshit. But the time has come to settle, and the devil's gonna make a choose. And just like a cold wind blowing, can you feel me coming to you? Just like a freight train rolling back, tight full of rhythm to blues.
Good evening, and welcome to another 60-minute dose of sucker-free conservatism that all the fly honeys like to refer to as the Right Hook. I, of course, am your host, the Rated R Republican, the social media messiah, blogger without a cause, and not only am I a voice for the voiceless, but the heart and soul of YRs nationwide. Long Island's own John Brodigan, doing it proud, doing it loud, and doing it just because I owe it to the people. Coming up on this week's show, I've been jokingly referring to this show as my quote-unquote war on women show. Not that anyone takes the Democrat Party's quote-unquote war on women seriously anymore, I believe, between the Republican Party and those of us on Twitter. We've mocked that to the point where they've moving on to the Obama campaign is moving on to Plan F, and we're probably going to mock that also, but that's we'll save that for another show. But the reason I've been calling this the War on Women show is because I happen to have three guests who, when the Democrat Party wants to say that Republicans hate women or Republicans want, you know, send women back to the kitchen or keep them barefoot, whatever nonsense they come up with, the three ladies who tend to disagree with what the left has to say about them. We'll be talking to Congresswoman Nan Hayworth, who is currently running for re-election in the newly redrawn-ish New York 17. We'll also be talking to Jedediah Bilya, GBTV, Fox News, and the author of a recent book, Outnumbered, Chronicles of a Manhattan Conservative. And we'll also be talking to a good friend of the show, Jessica Proud. She's a New York political strategist. One of these days I'm going to be able to pronounce that word. So we should have fun, and because it's the quote-unquote War on Women show, nothing but badass rocket chicks for the bumpers. But without further ado, the Congresswoman currently representing the New York 18, about running for re-election in the newly redrawn New York 17, great friend of the YRs, spoke to her at a meeting in Orange County on Saturday. Huge audience, huge following. She was nice enough to spend some time with us. And as you're listening to this interview, I wasn't able to edit it because my editing skills aren't as good as they should be. But I just want you to listen and keep in mind, if you're ever driving and you see someone interviewing a congresswoman outside of a hotel, don't interrupt them and ask them what time it is. I mean, the guy is holding a tape recorder. You know, she obviously looks like she's important. Find someone else. That being said, making her return to the show. Talking to Nan Hayworth, Congresswoman in the New York, right now the 19, we'd run to the 18. I usually start off my interviews asking people how it is where they're at, but we're standing in Orange County right now. It's actually gorgeous out.
Yes, it's nice.
So, generally, whenever I'm speaking to a congressperson, I have a set of questions I want to ask.
Yeah.
But this president being what he is, he always throws us the curveball.
Oh, so true.
Let me just ask you, do you agree with President Obama that the private sector is doing fine?
That was a striking comment that clearly defied reality in ways that are both distressing and alarming. although when you look at the president's approach to fiscal policy, he does apparently feel that the federal government needs still more resources. I disagree passionately with him. We are absolutely going in the wrong direction with the federal government under this administration, and with a Senate that does virtually nothing to try to help move the legislative agenda that we have been so conscientious about pursuing in the House.
Yeah.
More resources have to be remaining in the private sector. That's where true growth takes place. And everybody wants growth.
Yeah.
If you ask Democrats and Republicans alike, they'll all say, we need to grow. And Republicans, of course, believe, rightly, history is on our side, that growth happens when we allow men and women to do what they do best in a motivated, incentivized economy.
Yeah.
And that means let them keep what they work so hard for in far greater proportion than they're able to do now.
Yeah. And I know whenever I have a Republican guest on, they talk about jobs and the economy, and of course, I'm a true believer.
Yeah.
I know what it is. And I know you're in the middle of running for your re-election,
yeah.
And a lot of voters, when they say, all right, well, that sounds good, but they see what goes on in D.C., where instead of creating jobs, it's a lot of arguing over a philosophical difference.
Right.
What are some things that we could be doing? First, I mean, how do you make the case to voters like that? But also,
sure.
Some things we could be doing to create jobs that don't involve arguing with liberals in the Congress.
Right. Right. Well, first we have to acknowledge that what creates jobs is not government, and I'm using quotes here, investment.
Mm-hmm.
In order, with the sole purpose of trying to create jobs. What creates jobs is actually letting businesses, small ones and our larger ones, thrive. And the way they thrive is by allowing them to earn and to put what they profit from, and let's assume that profit is the value that they create from offering a better product or a better service. Profit is their reward. What will they do with that profit? They'll grow. Every business person I know will grow his or her business further, right?
Yeah.
They want to do more. They've been rewarded for doing something good. They want to do more of that. They'll hire more people. They'll expand their facilities. They'll expand their offerings. They'll open a new location. Government does not do things, does not take your hard-earned dollars and put them toward things that the marketplace has chosen. The marketplace chooses sensibly. Government chooses on the basis of cronies, political pals, this thing that someone wants to put some money into that no one else will invest in. That's bad, that's wrong, and that's why $1 trillion of so-called stimulus has only bought us record-breaking unemployment and poverty levels.
Mm. I think another issue that they were planning on using this election is the quote-unquote war on women, the GOP's war on women, which is obviously something you would probably disagree with.
Yes.
And generally speaking, in the past, it's worked for them. You know, here's this issue, and we're just going to tell people that if you disagree with this issue, then you hate police group here.
Right.
There seems to be a lot more of a pushback this year. I know the House GOP has been very proactive in pushing back.
Yes.
Are voters, maybe because there's more information out there, are voters starting to get it more, A, see through what they're trying to do,
right,
and B, like, you know, forget about whatever issues, you know, whether you're a male or a woman, you're looking for work, you want lower gas prices.
Exactly.
People are starting to get it more.
Right. The women whom I talk with here in our district, and I'm privileged to have that opportunity every week, and I cherish it, and women across the country in broad surveys tell us that their concerns are the ones that the Republicans are addressing directly. And that is, they want to put food on the table. They need to put gas in their tanks. They need to have a roof over the heads of the children and families and friends they cherish. They need to have communities that are thriving, that have opportunity. And Republican principles that respect our individual citizens and our taxpayers and our communities are resonating with them.
Mm-hmm.
And we have found Governor Romney's closing the gap among women, such as there was one, because they understand that these are things that everyone cares about, women and men alike, and that's what most concerns all of us.
Yeah. One thing I've been noticing, and I'm curious to see if it plays this way in November, New York's never going to be a red state. but I've noticed pockets
never
of it.
You never know, John.
You never know. That's true. You know, let's be positive.
Yeah.
But I have noticed the pockets of it are getting, and I hate the color sip in the first place, but for lack
right.
of a better
right.
phrase, they're getting more purpler.
Yes.
Because people seem to be getting...
From blue, you mean.
From blue,
yes.
People seem to be getting, agreeing more with conservative policies, even if they don't like the fact that they're calling it conservative policies. Because
right.
for the longest time, conservatism was, you know, like Terry Schiavo and stem cells.
Right.
As you talk to the talk to voters, you go around the district.
Right.
Are they actually warming up more to actual conservatism, or just they know the way we've been doing it in New York doesn't work anymore?
They're acknowledging the dismal state of New York's economy, and they're recognizing that high taxes and heavy regulations drive people out of the state. I asked Tim Geithner, the Secretary of the Treasury, personally. We were in a hearing in Financial Services. And I asked him to name a state, an example among our 50 states, in which a state with high taxes and heavy regulations was growing faster.
It's about 3 o'clock.
Than one with lower taxes and lighter regulations. He couldn't name one, because we know it's painful to see people leaving this beautiful Hudson Valley, where they'd really love to stay, where they grew up, where they have neighbors and friends. But the sad truth is that New York is the most hostile state to business in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And if not the most, then very close. And opportunities moving elsewhere, and people move where the opportunities are. It doesn't matter what their station in life is. They have to go where they can find a job, where they can find growing communities. And that's all in states that welcome opportunity and welcome enterprise.
You're just finishing up your first term,
yeah.
running for re-election. As you look back, what were some things that surprised you as your first time in Congress, and what are some things we could look forward to? Well, you know, obviously you have to, you know, actually get elected first,
right.
but in your second term.
Right. You know, John, it's more and more clear to me that we, as advocates for limited, restrained government that empowers the citizen, need to reach out at the grassroots level within our communities, among our fellow citizens, and educate and listen and learn and really be advocates for those principles among the folks who are going to be voting.
Mm-hmm.
Because without that foundation, without that fundamental understanding within our communities, it's a real challenge for us to get the kind of legislation that we need to have pass the House, the Senate, and the presidency, you know, and the president's desk. We have to have a groundswell among the American people, and we have to have advocates for our cause in public office who can represent that point of view effectively to everyone we serve. And that's my goal here in the Hudson Valley.
And if people want to get more information about you, get involved with the campaign,
yes.
re-election effort, what's the best way to go about doing so?
Really easy. It's nanhayworth.com.
That's easy to remember.
Yes, Hayworth with a Y.
Congresswoman Hayworth, thanks for joining us. Good luck on the campaign, and we will talk to you soon.
Thanks for all you do.
Thank you very much.
And we'll be right back. You're listening to The Right Hook on the mighty FTR Radio.
You're a real tough cookie with a long
This is Andrew Breitbart, and you're listening to FTR Radio.
I love teaming with the best. That's why I'm here at St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Our research has changed the way the world treats brain tumors, leukemia, and sickle cell. We help kids all across America. Now these kids have hope.
And a sense of humor.
Where'd you get this color?
It's natural.
Give thanks for the healthy kids in your life and give to those who are not. Donate now at stjude.org or shop wherever you see our magnifying glass.
Tired of having feelings? Get rid of those counterproductive emotions of depression, anger, and anxiety. BLI brand medication makes life better. Talk to your doctor today and eliminate all of your problems. BLI brand medication for a better tomorrow.
Anyway, welcome back to The Right Hook. You can follow us along on the internet at www.righthookny.com, facebook.com/TheRightHook, twitter.com/RightHookNY. I, of course, am twitter.com/Brodigan, ironically enough. And if you go to the iTunes, you could download all of our past podcasts for absolutely free. That's right, free. Excuse me. Again, my coughing into the microphone, my weekly ode to Don Imus. Coming up next, a good friend of FTR Radio's. This is actually the first time I've gotten to speak to her, but she's on the Snark Factor, and she's on the other FTR shows all the time. She's an enigma in and of herself, because not only is she a female, and not only is she from New York City, but she's also conservative, and she's not supposed to exist, at least according to Democrats. But she does. From Fox News, from GBTV, author of Outnumber, Confessions of a Manhattan Conservative. Hopefully I got the title right because the screen's down. But anyway, making her debut on the show.
Where do I fit in? What do I need to say? What do you want to hear?
Jedediah Bilia, Fox News, GBTV, and all that, and what I'm referring to as the Make Fingers Malloy Jealous segment of the show.
Oh, wow. Fingers Malloy. I know that name from somewhere.
So, you're going to speak to the YRs, and you speak to crowds and conservatives and voters all across the state, all across the country. So let me ask you this. Do you think the private sector is doing fine?
I do not. And I think that was great that he said that, because I think it proved just how out of touch Barack Obama is. It's amazing. He can release these videos featuring Hollywood celebrities, this highbrow elitist kind of stuff, but when it comes to relating to what average Americans are going through, this guy seems to have no idea what's happening. Of course, he came back and walked the statement back because he was probably humiliated and realized he just handed the Republicans a great clip for every ad that's going to come out.
Which just makes it worse.
2012.
Yeah, because he came out and said, "Oh, I'm sorry, I was just joking. It's not doing fine."
Exactly. But obviously, it's not doing fine. Anyone with their head on their shoulders right now realizes that.
You recently just wrote a book about being a conservative in the Republican hotbed of this Manhattan. One thing I'm noticing about the state of New York, and while I don't think it would ever be red, parts of it are getting purpler because people are beginning to warm up to conservative policies, even if they don't know that they are conservative policies.
Yeah, they don't like the label. It's funny. When I talk to people in New York, even in Manhattan, about conservatism, you have to talk and not use the word conservative. You can just talk about limited government, get the government out of my way. Even libertarians, you know, very popular themes in New York, but you can't use those words because they've been stigmatized. Mm-hmm. The left has said conservatives are homophobes, conservatives are racist, conservatives are this and that, and they've been allowed to define us for so long that you kind of have to talk to them about principle, not use that word, and then when you're done, be like, hey guys, guess what? That's conservatism. You just don't realize it. But I think you're right. I think a lot of areas are shifting, and I think that's because a lot of conservatives are planting their feet. Everyone says to me, well, why don't you go move to Texas? No, I want to stay in New York and change the dynamic in New York, not move to Texas. I want to change places like Los Angeles that I frequent often, or Miami, or wherever I need to be to kind of get that moving a little bit more red. I'd rather have my influence be there. Yeah. Plus, I have an inner hippie. Everyone knows it's my organic foods and my...
You can't get that in Texas.
I can't get rid of that.
Maybe parts of Florida, definitely not in Texas.
Right.
And... I know, because we're at a Young Republican meeting, and this kind of falls under where the stigma of the word conservative, because for the longest time, conservatism was like, you know, Terri Schiavo and embryonic stem cells.
Right.
But especially with, like, younger voters, generally when you're young, you're supposed to be anti-authority. You know, you don't like the cop, you don't like politicians, you don't like all that. Yet they all seem to fall under, you know, I hate authority, so I'm going to support a party that wants to have control over every aspect of my life.
Because they've been brainwashed. Young people, a lot of female voters, many people around the country have been brainwashed into believing that the Democrats are their allies, that they're protecting them. You know, Barack Obama won over the youth in 2008 with hope and change, with a lot of false promises. There's a sense of entitlement flowing through the country. But if young people really stop and think about it, the party of limited government and free responsibility, you know, sort of running your own life. If you want health insurance, buy it. If you don't want health insurance, you don't have to. All of these self-sufficiency, independent-minded Americans, young people, should fall to the right, because that's the party that's going to protect all those things for you and not dictate what you need to drink, a.k.a. nanny state Bloomberg.
We'll get to that in a second.
Or what you need to be doing with your time or your life, and let you run your life for yourself.
Yeah. I'll get to the nanny state thing in a second. But so how do we make the case to younger voters, especially since, you know, a lot of these people, like, you know, celebrities, college professors, all these other people that, not that they have more of an influence on their lives, they're just more prevalent
mm-hmm.
in their lives. So how do we make the case to, like, smack them upside the head and say, like, you know, pay attention, listen to who really wants to run your lives and who wants you to be free?
Oh, we have a lot of work to do. We have to, you know, Andrew Breitbart, you're wearing a great T-shirt right now, my buddy Andrew Breitbart, who I miss every day.
Yeah.
He used to talk about penetrating pop culture, and I'm a big fan of that. I think we need to go into pop culture, take over some of these genres that are utilized all the time, reality TV, whatever's hot right now for young people, penetrate that market with a message that's a little bit different. Sort of try to take control of the narrative. It involves a lot of outreach. You have to go to youth groups. You have to get out into the community, because it's been so many years of the left defining who conservatives are and young people buying into that. Then they go to school. That gets reinforced via academia, via their teachers. So it's going to take a lot of work. This isn't going to happen overnight. And we also need charisma on the right. You know, people say, well, charisma shouldn't be important. Well, whether it should be or not, it is important.
You have to be able to
communicate.
That's
what gets people elected, and that's what gets young people excited about voting.
Mm. You mentioned Bloomberg's soda ban.
Yeah.
Who apparently it's okay to have trace amounts of marijuana on you, but if you buy like a 20-ounce soda, you know, you go to the gulag, which I think falls into another problem when it comes to younger voters. And I know they say New York, you know, just avoid social issues at all costs. But the fact that Democrats get away with calling themselves pro-choice, meanwhile, you know, stuff like what you smoke, what you eat, whether you buy a 16-ounce soda or a 20-ounce soda, they're really against any other choices.
Yeah, it's all about control. I mean, I talked about this with Sean Hannity the other day, that it's not about what's good for your health. It's not, you know, he endorsed National Donut Day the same day he was talking about how you shouldn't be drinking, you know, more than a certain amount of soda. So this isn't about obesity and this isn't about health. This is about control. That's why the smoking laws are what they are. And the interesting thing about it in New York is that they do a lot of internal polling, and they find that people in New York generally don't have a problem with these kinds of regulations. They don't want you to be able to smoke. It's getting to the point where they're asking people if you think you should be allowed to smoke in your own apartment, and a lot of people are saying no. No, so until we change the culture and get people to understand if they can step on these rights, they can go even further and do heaven knows what to you down the road. This is more than a slippery slope. You're not going to change what elected leaders get away with.
Mm-hmm. How do you think the pushback's been? Because, I mean, this isn't the first time Democrats have tried the quote-unquote war on women. They may not have called it that, but usually they'll pick an issue and say, like, well, if you're against this, you hate women. This time around, it seems to not be working for them, especially if you look at some polling numbers where independent women are falling more in line with Romney.
Mm-hmm.
Is it because like more information's out there, or do you think people are just tired of like, oh, listen, we get what you're trying to do, stop?
I think it's because everyone right now is united around jobs. So whether you're a woman or a man or African American, whatever your race is, whatever your gender is, whatever your age is, everyone's focused on jobs, and this president has been horrific when it comes to jobs. So people don't want to hear him trying to carve the country up into special interest groups and cater to everyone. They want to hear what you're going to do for the economy. What are you going to do to get us back to work? And that's the thing that he never seems to be able to do. So also that Julia campaign, where it basically featured a woman that was dependent on government from birth to death, I don't think that women who are independent-minded and true feminists are really going to be able to get behind that without being embarrassed.
Yeah, I mean that's when you get when you put a bunch of liberal art majors in the room and say, listen, pitch me an idea, and because they don't speak to anyone else with a different opinion, they think, oh, this is a great idea.
Right, exactly.
And you'd mentioned Andrew Breitbart before. I know they had the Breitbart Awards this year. What do you think, I guess maybe his legacy or like the impact he's going to have? Because I know, personally speaking for me, I fall into the unfortunate group where I didn't understand what he was trying to do until, unfortunately, after he passed. You know, and when you look back at all the places where, like, well, I should have walked up to him at CPAC 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But what do you think some of the impact and, you know, where the movement goes now moving forward, now that we essentially lost our general?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a great way to put it. We did really lose our general. And he and I used to talk about a lot of things. Andrew was a think-outside-the-box kind of guy. You can't get a lot of people to do that, unfortunately. Everybody thinks in terms of elections, you know, get from point A to B. Andrew was kind of like, no, sometimes you have to walk around and you can accomplish a lot more. It may take you a little longer to get from A to B, but we can hit a whole bunch of stops along the way. So I think penetrating pop culture and penetrating media and penetrating a lot of these left-wing dominated machines, Hollywood, for example, figuring out a way to get the conservative message to have an equal playing field in those areas, I think that was one of his goals. And he and I talked about a lot of projects and ways to do that. So I'm hoping that even without his expertise, I can make some of those things happen and help carry that on. But I think everyone is sort of out there right now, proudly wearing Breitbart shirts, and kind of getting, like you said, even if you didn't quite get it before, it all came together now, and he's watching from somewhere, having a glass of wine and laughing.
And speaking of projects, do you have anything coming up that you want to tell us about, what we should look for?
Lots of TV. I mean, I announce TV every week. I think I'm back on Red Eye and Hannity and Blue Dobbs next week. So lots of Fox News, more GBTV, some projects going on in the back of my mind, but nothing solidified yet. But I plan to keep it unconventional, as always, so people can count on that.
Jedediah Bilia, jedediahbilia.com and twitter.com, whatever. Thanks for joining us this week, and we'll talk to you soon.
Sounds great.
And we'll be right back. Actually, before we go, I completely butchered the name of her book in the intro to the interview. It is called Outnumbered: Chronicles of a Manhattan Conservative, available on Amazon.com and wherever fine ebooks are sold. That said, we'll be right back. You're listening to The Right Hook on the Mighty FTR.
This is Andrew Breitbart, and you're listening to FTR Radio.
When you're drinking your overpriced coffee or a Moco Choco, whatever, and the Wacko Latte at Starbucks, you ever feel like you're the only conservative in there? That's because you probably are. But don't feel bad, as you can annoy the bejesus out of those pesky Moonbat, New York Times, and Daily Coast reading liberals by reading HoosierAccess.com. At HoosierAccess.com, you can read the latest thought and opinion from conservatives in the crossroads of America. Annoy the Moonbats. Add HoosierAccess.com to your favorites today.
Please stare into the center of the movie Shame. I'm so happy to be alive. Everything is going to be fine. Did I take my medication today? Keep working hard to stay alive. Goodbye.
Our third and final guest, I'm actually surprised it's taken me so long to ask her if she wanted to be on the show, because if it's a cool guest on the show, and my good friend, founder, and TRH original, Lynn Crow, didn't help me with it, there's a good chance that Jessica did. Robbie Astorino, Bob Turner, when we had Joe Carbon on, she's helped out with all of them. And it just dawned on me one day, like, hey, she does the roundtable circuit for the local and New York shows. I should ask her to be our mind. That being said, making her long overdue debut on the show. Jessica Proud, welcome finally to the Right Hook.
Thank you, John. Thanks for having me on. It's great to be with you.
How's the greater metropolitan area treating you today?
Well, it's pretty good. We're anticipating President Obama's arrival tomorrow. He's going to be in town for some more fundraising and hobnobbing with celebrities. So I think we're planning a little GOP welcome.
Actually, speaking of which, because I want to get to the Warren Woman stuff in a second, but I've been asking everyone I've been interviewing this week, simple question, as you talk to voters and, you know, talk to coworkers and talk to, other people of New York, do you think the private sector is doing just fine?
Well, it's funny you should say that, because no one I talk to thinks it's doing just fine. Maybe the people the president keeps in his circle think that, but in the real world, people are struggling. And the proof is in the pudding. The facts are we have another abysmal job report that just came out. 23 million Americans are either unemployed, underemployed, or have stopped looking for work altogether. So maybe he should check in with the Labor Department on that one.
And because I know you you do PR for political campaigns. When your opponent said something like that, do you ever just send him a fruit basket just for making your week easier?
Yes, thank you very much. It is. I'm sure the Romney campaign was very excited to get that little gift the other day. So, look, people make gaffes in politics all the time, but this one really speaks to the president's mentality and his thinking. He has demonstrated such tone deafness when it comes to putting forward initiatives that will help jumpstart the economy. You know, he has consistently lost political battles, most recently in Wisconsin, and he just refuses to get the message.
And speaking of losing political battles, I'm of the impression that the Obama campaign was expecting their quote-unquote Warren women to make it all the way to election eve. And it's funny that how much the pushback came out, and I'm interested in getting your take on it, because as far as liberals are concerned, you're not supposed to exist. Because besides being what you would call one of them women, you're also young.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, from the New York City Manhattan-ish area. So I guess my first question for you is, why do you hate yourself?
This is a topic that really pushes my buttons. And, women, this whole notion of this war on women and that women are this monolithic group that all care about the same things is just completely manufactured and false. I mean, granted, I'm definitely of the minority being a young woman Republican in living in Manhattan. We like to joke sometimes, and we're like the Marines, the few, the proud. But there are others out there that really feel the same way. And the bottom line is the economic issues and the lack of jobs in the country right now, especially for young women, is of utmost importance. And I found it really interesting. There was a recent poll that came out that showed only one-third of American women felt that there was war being waged on them. And, you look at the Democrats, and they try to manufacture these issues to distract from what their failed record is, honestly. So it's hard to believe that, with Romney as the president, that I'm all of a sudden going to have to go to some back alley in Chinatown to find access to birth control. I mean, it's really pathetic. I don't think it's resonated with the general electorate. Even today, it's sort of died down a little bit. But, if they haven't touched that, they're going to pick something up else, calling Romney a bully and that he's, against transgender and bisexuals. And, it's all an effort to distract against their failed record is the bottom line.
Yeah. Well, what do you do? Because I know New York's never particularly known for being a conservative state, but the part of it that we are in is particularly intolerant towards divergent views. And I'm sure you've been in the same position I've been in where, you know, you're at a bar one night, you have a drink with friends, and someone decides to bring up politics and they find out you're Republican. Ew, how can you be with them when they hate women, they hate XYZ?
Well, I have it extra difficult because immediately when someone asks me what I do for a living, I start to cringe and shake because I'm expecting a berating. Because immediately when you say you work in politics, you know, most of the time they just assume you're a Democrat, but I usually like to tell them right up front. So it's definitely a challenge sometimes, but I think, you know, now more than ever, people are realizing that the policies of the left and the liberal Democrats are not working. And people that maybe I would have talked to 4 years ago that were Obama's biggest cheerleaders are now singing a different tune. So, you know, well, they do identify themselves maybe more liberal on social issues, which is understandable. But at the same time, they're also realizing that the policies with Obama are just not bringing them the results that they expect.
Yeah. That's actually an interesting point because I have similar experience. Like when I'm at work and over the course of the past 4 years, it started in 2008 with, oh my God, how can you be a Republican? To 4 years later, people begging me to find them anyone they could possibly vote for.
Exactly.
Who's not Obama. And I've noticed, and like I said, New York's never going to be particularly, as much as I hate the color system, a particularly blue state, but there seems to be a lot of people who, even though they don't like the word Republican because it reminds them rightly or wrongly of George Bush and some of the more far-right policies, they're getting more in tune with lower taxes, reforming pension systems. You see this going on in Westchester. How do we take that and help get like, you know, independent-minded voters to realize that the stuff that you like, you may not have liked the word before, but the stuff that you support right now, they're Republican policies.
Yeah, I think it's two key things, really. It's the messenger and the message. You know, we need to be out there. We can't just assume that certain areas are Democratic or certain constituencies are Democratic and that they're automatically off the table. We need to be communicating with people and doing, you know, going into – Rob Astorino is great at this in Westchester. He goes into African-American churches. He goes into the Hispanic community and speaks Spanish. Talk to them about why these issues are important and why they matter to families. And I think that's a key thing. You know, for a long time, we just sort of wrote people off thinking that they're never going to come our way. And we can't afford to do that anymore, honestly.
Yeah. And I've also noticed like a lot of the tricks that the left has been trying to do, much like the war on women are, like when they pick a group and if you don't agree with this one policy, therefore you hate this person. For the longest time, they've worked, but they seem to be like a lot more pushback this election cycle against them. In case in point, you see like the House GOP, the women of the House GOP, taking a proactive attack on like that Julia slideshow, and whenever Obama tries bringing up the war on women. Do you think that has to do with the fact that it's literally just people worried about jobs and the economy, or are we getting better because of like all the information that's out there and because of the internet and social media, getting more better, I'm talking about communication, I'm saying words like more better, getting better at forming the message and getting the message out to like the right people?
I think it's a little bit of both, honestly. I mean, we have been doing a better job at it. I do feel like the party is communicating better and embracing technology as part of that. And even your radio show is a great way to reach people, and we need to be doing as much of that as possible. And part of it is that the Democrats are consistently offering these thin attacks that just don't hold weight when people really feel like there are much more pressing issues on the table. So it's a combination. You know, when times are good and, you know, people are making money, they feel comfortable, they feel like the future is going to be bright, they're not as they're more susceptible, I think, to some of those kind of attacks on the social issues and demagoguing Republicans and conservatives. But now they're really hurting out there, and they realize that this kind of stuff is a lot of hot air and noise.
So, guys, specifically in New York, how do you, like, pull that stuff together to where – I know you're currently working with Bob Turner's statewide U.S. Senate campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And I've noticed for the past two election cycles, this one in 2010 – you know, we follow politics. You know, you and I both know that we have these great candidates running statewide, and well, people might fall on different sides. We still know who the people are. But whenever these polls come out, it's not even that a majority of the state hasn't heard of them. It's the majority of Republican voters voting in the Republican primary.
I know.
Doesn't have the name ID. How do we – and especially looking as we're going to be looking forward to 2014 and hopefully taking out Governor Cuomo before he runs for president, how do we get it to where – you know, at least the people in our own party know our candidates.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think this year is particularly challenging in that for the first time we have a June federal primary, which no one's used to. And the same thing with the presidential primary. I mean, you would think that every Republican in the state would have a clue when the Republican presidential primary was. But you only saw 7% turnout. So it is extremely discouraging. Unfortunately, New York is a really expensive state to run campaigns in. The media market is very expensive, so it takes a lot of money to get a message out. And, you know, this is not an attack on my friends in the press, but you do have a solid chunk of the media that are liberal-leaning and don't necessarily give the coverage, I think, that the Republican races sometimes deserve. You know, there's certainly some great, fair journalists out there, but there definitely is a mentality among the press corps, I think, that you can't win statewide as a Republican in New York anymore. So they don't pay attention unless it turns into a really close horse race. And then, you know, then they start covering.
And before we let you go, just because I do have a younger audience and a lot of people who, you know, they're getting out of school and then they're looking to find the way to how they're going to make their mark in politics or just make their mark in the world. If you could just talk a little how you got your start.
Sure. I actually started interning in the Assembly when I went to school at the University of Albany, and I interned with Assemblyman Gary Finch from upstate. And I met so many great people through that experience, and I made a ton of connections. And then I ended up working for the Assembly and then the Senate after college. I worked for Kathy Young, who represents the Southern Tier, when she was in the Assembly, and we won a special election to the Senate. And after that, I worked on the governor's race in 2006, which unfortunately, you know, we didn't win. But I would definitely recommend working on as many campaigns as possible. I would always volunteer my time and go to things, meet as many people as possible, because you know what? There are, especially on the communication side, there really is a lack of talented people out there that do what we do. So I know for myself, I'm always looking for young people out of college that, you know, to hire or to put on a campaign. Candidates are always looking for great, young, ambitious people to work on campaigns. So I suggest just, you know, trying to network as much as possible. That's really the key.
Well, Jessica Proud, the few, the proud, no pun intended, the New York Republican strategist. Good luck out on the campaign trail, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks so much, John. Have a great night.
You too.
Bye-bye.
And that's our show. Thanks to Congresswoman Hayworth, Jedediah Bilia, and Jessica Proud. Tune in next week, where we'll be talking to – this is actually exciting. We're going to be talking to Grover Norquist from the Americas for Tax Reform. We'll be talking to conservative New York State Conservative Party Chairman Mike Long, and we'll be talking to New York Senate candidate Wendy Long. So it should be another huge, huge show. Hope you enjoyed this week. Take it away, Lita Ford. Peace.
I went to a party last Saturday night. I did a good day. I got in a fight. It ain't no big thing. Late for my job and the traffic was bad. Had to borrow $10 from my old man. It ain't no big thing.